I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. The director, Richard Bell, joins me now. His critically acclaimed film, Brotherhood, is available through video on demand. The film is a true story of a band of teenage boys who set across Balsam Lake in Ontario in a war canoe that capsized during a deadly summer storm in 1926. The film stars Brendan Fair and Brendan Fletcher, two camp leaders of the Brotherhood of St. Andrew. The film's cast includes Jake Manley, Sam Ash Arnold, Matthew Eisen, Gage Monroe, Dylan Everett, Spencer McPherson, Evan Marsh, Haig McGarry, Mike Taylor, Daniel Gravel, and Perry Mucci. Richard Bell is the writer and director of 18, which also starred Brendan Fletcher. He is a graduate of Studio 58 and an alumnus of the TIFF Talent Lab, the Praxis Center for Screenwriters Screenwriting Lab, and the CFC's Writers' Workshop at the Whistler Film Festival. He also recently co-produced Anthem of a Reluctant Prophet. Brotherhood is nominated for two Canadian Screen Awards for Mr. Bell and Bramwell Tovey for Best Original Song and for Achievement in Visual Effects. Visit brotherhood1926.com for more information on the film and a listing of the various ways one can buy and stream the movie here in Canada and in the United States. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Richard Bell. Mr. Bell, good morning.
Hello, good morning. How are you?
Pretty good yourself.
Pretty good. Pretty good, all things considered.
Yeah, everything that's going on around us, it's tough for a lot of people, and a lot of us are confining ourselves to our homes and the sort, and this is just a perfect film to watch, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think so. It's kind of strange how this is all unfolded, and with Brotherhood, they had a storm. We have a virus. The leaders, the camp leaders in Brotherhood, they had a war. They had the Great War. And then, as you'll see in the movie, like with their backstory, they also had to contend with the Spanish flu. Mm. Now, all the soldiers at that time in the Great War were in close quarters. They were in really unsanitary conditions, and they all came back home, you know, on ocean liners and on trains, and they brought it back. So the cruel irony, of course, is that these men survived, you know, the men who survived the Great War, they came home with this bacterial bullet. Uh-huh. At the screening at the Rio recently in Vancouver, I think it made the hairs on the back of everyone's neck stand up when, you know, the concept of the Spanish flu is spoken about in the movie. And I know Brendan Fletcher, who stars as Arthur Lambden, one of the camp leaders, he was just like, oh, got chills, you know, at that part. That was just 101 years ago, and here we are again.
Indeed. Before we get too far into the conversation, I saw the movie was available on Shaw On Demand. A lot of us have Shaw in this part of the world. I guess that's one place where we can get it. Where else can people get the film?
Yeah, so it's on Shaw On Demand, and then here in Vancouver, it would be on TELUS as well. It's on Rogers On Demand in Ontario, and I guess wherever Rogers On Demand is. Uh-huh. It's on iTunes, and then in the States, Google Play, YouTube, Microsoft. The distributors have gone wide with it, which is, fantastic. A lot has changed since I did my last film, when it was just kind of like, released on DVD, and you'd hope that an HMV store would pick it up.
It's a long time ago, isn't it?
Yeah.
And not too long, I should say, but it's a different world. Yeah.
It does feel different.
Yeah, where's Balsam Lake?
So Balsam Lake is located in the Kawartha Lake District in Ontario. So it's about a 2.5-hour drive northeast from Toronto.
And was any of the film shot there?
Unfortunately, we couldn't shoot there because it's just too modern. It's it doesn't look like Balsam Lake did in 1920s. It's surrounded by cottages, and also sound would have been a nightmare because you would have had speedboats all the time, right? And that the drone of speedboats really carries. We had extensive visual effects done in the movie, but I didn't want to spend any money, having to, delete boats or delete cottages or, decks and all that kind of stuff. So what I wanted to do was find an area that felt like Balsam Lake would have back then. But also, I'm not, necessarily a total slave to detail in the sense that Brotherhood can be viewed many ways. And one of the things that kind of struck me was when one of the actors read it and he said, oh, I feel like this whole movie is a memory. It's like one of the camp leader's memories, remembering it as an old man. So it's not necessarily what was real. It could be what was remembered. The poetry of the location that we shot at, which was in Northern Ontario, like the location was just colossal and primordial and beautiful. We actually shot on a First Nation. So we could almost shoot like almost like 360 degrees, right? And we didn't have to contend with any speedboats or any modernisms getting in the way. So as far as like the poetry of the movie, the visual poetry, it was more important to me to find somewhere that looked untouched, that looked very wild.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. It looks like it would look like in 1926. There are other marvelous details in the film that bring us, the viewer, back to 1926, visual things, like the trains, for example.
Yeah.
Was that fun in terms of say, bringing the viewer back to 1926 researching?
Oh, yeah. Like, I love detail, and I love period detail, and my idea of, like, a heaven that I'd like to go to would be one where we can time travel and visit these different times and places in human history. So, you know, the closest we have to that right now is movies. And I believe in putting the money on the screen as much as possible, and when there isn't money, just being as creative as possible and getting the detail on the screen. Like, my costume designer did a sumptuous job, and the production designer was, very detail-oriented. And then also just, like, I always made sure that the actors had things, like, in their pockets that you wouldn't even see, like, you know, chewing gum or, you know, playing jacks or a yo-yo or something. I just feel like that all adds to the feel and the magic and the sparkle of the movie. No one was allowed to have a cell phone in their pocket. I was just like, get the cell phone, like, keep them, you know, offset, you know, because that stuff just, I feel like it's very invasive, and it's invasive for an actor. Like, just, I think one has to be immersed in the period as much as possible.
And that's one of the things that one of the camp leaders instills in these boys, the Brotherhood of St. Andrew, that they need to get away from their electronic devices, from electric sockets, essentially, is what he says in the film.
Yeah.
It's timely, isn't it?
Well, very timely. I mean, the concern that we have for our youth, and, you know, as we kind of make our way through the current day boy crisis, nothing has really changed, you know, and in my research, I discovered that a similar state of concern for boyhood existed in the early 20th century, and it's why Lord Baden-Powell founded the Cub Scouts. That's why there was a lot of religious camps that were, you know, heading out into the wilderness. The modern-day Olympic movement was reignited in the early 20th century, and it was all about encouraging people to be athletic and be outdoorsy and to, you know, rub elbows with one another. I'm looking at it through the lens of boys and a brotherhood and a boys' camp. But, you know, there were certainly girls' camps that sprang up then as well. But, yeah, like, I don't feel like much has changed. I think that we need a return to nature. You know, it's kind of weird to be talking about it right now because, you know, everyone's being encouraged to stay indoors.
Right, right.
Nature is like a very curative thing, and we need to be out, you know, in the fresh air and, you know, going down to the creek and looking for tadpoles.
Indeed, and we can do that still, just we have to keep our distance from other people.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, when did you first, Richard, learn of this story?
I probably started writing it in 2011. I think that's when the treatment was done. In September of 2011, I ventured out to Balsam Lake to actually do my research there, and met some locals and went out on the lake in a speedboat and went in the lake, you know, and just, you know, threw myself into the world.
And
so from about when I started writing it to when we went to camera, that was about 6 or 7 years.
And it's a story that is not well known. I mean, at the time, you know, there are monuments and the sort for these boys. It wasn't well known in that part of the world. Is it still unknown, if you will?
Well, we did a screening of the film. Like, the first time I ever showed the movie was for the residents of Balsam Lake. That mm-hmm. was how I wanted to pay homage and show respect to them for taking their local story and making it into a movie. And there were people who were familiar with the story. And then there was, like, one lady came up to me and said, I've lived on this lake for 40 years, and I've never heard this story. You know, I showed it at a little film festival in Halliburton, which is kind of like on the other side of the lake.
Yeah.
And this lady came up to me and she said, my grandfather taught me to swim and made sure I learned how to swim every single summer. And every summer he would tell me the story about the Brotherhood of St. Andrew. So I think it's known and it's not known.
Yeah. And what a wonderful way to tell this story, as you do, on film, which is the way that a lot of people nowadays learn history, isn't it?
Yep. Well, it's magical. It's still magical. And even now, going through this dark time, it's like everyone's turning to film and entertainment, and I hope books as well.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, that's where we go for our escape, and that's where we go to confront our unique human truths.
The two heads of the camp, Arthur and Robert, they're both played by Brendans, I noticed.
The two Brendans, I know.
Yeah, they instill. Well, they have two different approaches in how they want to, deal with the boys in terms of the qualities of leadership that they want to instill. You're the director. Getting actors to work as a team. I mean, there's a great deal of work in terms of getting a cast like this together and getting them to do what you want them to do.
Mm-hmm.
What was your approach in terms? Because a lot of these guys are young too, aren't they?
Yeah. So the youngest at the time would have been 14.
Mm-hmm.
They were ranged in age from about 14 to 24 or 25, and then of course we have the two Brendans who are grown ups.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really one of the big secrets of directing is just to cast well. So I had a really good casting director in Toronto. We, made sure to we auditioned people who were the best of the best and, frankly, who were about to break, and that has happened, you know, since then. I'm not particularly a fan of lazy actors. I did 3 years at an intensive theater school, Studio 58 mm-hmm. here in Vancouver at Langara College. So I really like actors who, you know, are going to do the work, the field work. I gave them 3 books to read. They also had to do character work and, you know, we went away on a retreat and, everybody had to, like, in the woods, to a lodge, and everybody had to bring a skill that they could teach another kid. So someone brought a magic trick, you know, someone taught us how to make a rabbit snare, someone taught us how to build the fire that we sat around.
Uh-huh.
You know, we had, like, breakfast and barbecued, and everybody had to chip in, and this is all team-building stuff. It creates a lovely esprit de corps amongst the guys, and then of course they had their paddling lessons, like learning how to paddle the war canoe. So I mean, the very act of paddling a war canoe is a cohesive act. Like, you know, the canoe tips if you're not all in rhythm.
Yeah.
So by the time we ended up on location, the boys had developed a bond already, and a language between one another that was, you know, infectious and delightful. And the two Brendans came later, but when they arrived on location, like, all the boys, they went out and they read their character bios to the two Brendans.
Uh-huh.
And for them, they were, you know, very moved. They were like, wow, this is a really cool thing.
Yeah.
Also, just being on location and being in such a gorgeous place that we were on the First Nation, like, they had a lot of opportunities to go swimming together and, you know, hang out and go bowling and all that kind of stuff. So it was good and it was important for the feel of the film, but it was also great in the sense that because we had to move so fast, I needed a cast that was very cohesive.
Right, Is this the second time that you worked with Bramwell Tovey?
Yeah, it's the second time. He did the he was the composer for 18, which is my first film.
Right, and so for this film, what was his contribution? Was it the score, or was it a couple songs? I understand.
Yeah, so he wrote an original song in it, co-wrote it with me. Well, I did the lyrics. He did the music and the lyrics.
Uh-huh.
And he also did some of the musical arrangements. There's some singing in the movie because the film is a camping film. He was supposed to do the score, but he had his last season of the VSO, and he had tons of musical engagements at that time. So he actually suggested his assistant conductor, named William Rowson, to write the score, it was great. So Bramwell was sort of like an elder statesman of sorts, kind of like a music supervisor for the film.
Yeah, would you tell us the song that you guys wrote?
Yeah, so it's meant to be like a pastiche of sorts of like Great War marching songs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The newspaper articles at the time said that the boys kept their spirits up by singing religious songs. But I thought to myself, well, maybe that's what they said, or that's what they told the newspapers.
Yeah.
But perhaps they actually just sang dirty songs to keep their spirits up. So that was my take on it, that, as they were desperately clinging to the canoe, they thought to keep their spirits buoyant by singing a dirty song. So Bramwell and I wrote this song called I've Got a Big One, and it's kind of like, it's in the spirit of also the songs of the 20s that were about something, but, in coded language. There's like a great song for the 20s called Put Your Banana in My Fruit Basket. So it was kind of like a cross between that and a World War One marching song that would, just be sung between men.
Yeah, see, it comes at a very needed part in the film.
Johnny needs a bit of reprieve.
Yeah, and it's a very uplifting song. And I thought, when I first saw it, I thought it was Ivor Novello or Cole Porter or something like that. You know what I mean?
Bramwell's really good at writing things like in the spirit of that, like in the spirit of yesteryear.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Just a lovely piece in the film.
Thank you.
The idea of what's a hero and who's brave is something that's also explored in the film. It's set, almost 100 years ago, or over 100 years ago in the case of the Great War. These are things, that's the funny thing about history, isn't it? These things keep coming back, don't they?
Oh, yeah, time is cyclical, and I'm not just saying that because I'm like a Star Trek and a science fiction fan. I feel like we're just kind of like always in this position and kind of like always kind of acting surprised when it comes around again. But it's just like, we've done this before, we've been through this before, and the thing that frightens me is when I see us making the same mistakes that we did before.
The relationship to the outdoors, I don't really have one, but it's fascinating to see how the wild has such mystery that we either stay away from it, like I do, or there's some of us that want to defy it, that want to tame it. And in the case of these boys, they try and can't quite.
Yeah, well, it's definitely something that needs to be respected. I think that we do need to spend time outdoors, and I think that there is a place for adventure and calculated risk.
Mm-hmm.
But, ultimately nature always wins, and it's just like, well, what are you going to do? Like, you're not going to go out? Like, I'm a bit of a homebody myself, but and I probably would have been a homebody when I was a kid, but my parents sort of forced me out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was quite content to stay at home and watch He-Man and, Transformers.
Yeah.
But they were like, oh, you got to go on Cub Camp. And I was like, oh, I don't want to go to Cub Camp. But I had a great time at Cub Camp.
Yeah.
That's kind of baked into my childhood memories. Like these, and we went camping in the wintertime as well.
Wow.
I have so many memories that involve camping. And also, we had a cabin at Hatsik Lake outside of Mission. So a lot of summers were spent, you know, on the lake and, you know, splashing about in the water at, you know, a fun time with my older brother and whatnot. So I, and those are memories that I hold quite dear. So I'm glad that I was exposed to that. And, you know, now I guess as an adult, my experience is, you know, I live in Kitts, and when my brain is too occupied, I just go for a nice long walk out to Jericho. And,
yeah,
and that, that view and, you know, the, having the ocean there is just, I find to be very curative.
Indeed, indeed. I mean, a lot of us are going online, Twitter and the sort, and finding photos of that at, the, at this time. The film played, I guess, the festival circuit late last year, and you mentioned the screening here at the Rio. Watching it on the big screen, as you have over the last little bit, I mean, and then of course, playing here at the Rio, I mean, that must be just fun, isn't it, at the end of this process of making a movie? Because it does take a long time, doesn't it?
Oh, it takes, yeah, an incredibly long time. I think... for me, the best experiences were Cinefest Sudbury last September. We were given a Monday at 4 o'clock, and I thought no one would come, and the film ended up overflowing into two theaters, which was amazing.
Yeah.
But at the Silver City there in Sudbury, it was just great. I'd never seen it on such a big screen, right? So it was like huge screen and impeccable sound, and some of the festivals and also on the TIFF film circuit, you're kind of like playing in auditoriums or, you know, like more mom and pop theaters, which is okay. The visuals has always been pretty good, but it kind of needs to be in a quote unquote real theater for the sound.
Yeah.
The experience just recently at the Rio was just fantastic. The projection was pristine, but their sound system is fantastic, and it was exactly the way the sound mixer and I had programmed it, had you know, built the soundscape. So I was sitting there, you know, next to my two brothers who came to see the movie, and they were seeing it for the first time. And there was, you know, you could hear the woodpecker behind you.
Wow.
Or during the storm sequences, you can hear that hard rain,
yeah,
you know, or you could hear something sweeping over you. And as much as I get that people consume media mostly at home, and I'm guilty of that too, and I mostly don't go to the cinemas because I find it to be kind of like a really uncivilized experience.
Right, right.
With all the commercials and
yeah,
all the
yeah,
texters and the popcorn munchers. But it's just kind of like, yeah, do you know what? Like, filmmakers and directors, we really do make our movies to be seen on the big screen and
yeah,
to be heard on the big screen. So, you know, a friend of mine, he's a publicist, he watched it recently on a WestJet flight, and he was incredibly moved by it, and he sent me an email, and he was just like, it's amazing, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it was immersive for him, but for
yeah,
me, it's just like, that's not quite what I had in mind.
But yeah,
that being said, on a recent trip back from a film festival in Sault Ste. Marie, I watched Rocket Man, and I was thoroughly engrossed with it. Like, I loved it. I had a great time. I thought the music was great, and I never fell out of a moment. And I was watching it on a screen that was like, I don't know, like 6 inches by 4 inches.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's just like, I, you know, I get it.
Yeah. What, I hate to ask this question because we're talking about this film now, but what's next for you?
Yeah, so I have a real interest in true stories, and I do like stories from the past. So there is a story that I've found that's based on a true story that about a mining accident that happened on Vancouver Island.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I might do that next. But you know, all that being said, I don't know. Like, who knows? Like, it's a bit of a question mark. You know, I've come out of the Brotherhood experience really realizing that it's the filmmaking in this country is really just more of a hobby. It's not sustainable.
Yeah.
It's very difficult. I've been doing it now for like 20 years. I've done like 3 projects.
Yeah.
I don't like, if it didn't choose me, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But I really feel like it chose me.
Yeah. Well, this is a very fine achievement. I urge people to watch this film any way they can. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you about it. Congratulations again, and all the best.
Thank you so much, Joseph. It was a great chat.
Visit brotherhood1926.com for more information on the film, as well as a listing of the various ways one can buy and stream the movie here in Canada and in the United States. Richard Bell joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.